Hey, this is David Hayter. You may know me as the screenwriter of films like X-Men, X-Men 2, and Watchmen, but you probably know me best as the voice of Solid Snake from Metal Gear Solid. And you're listening to Hawaii's number one podcast, the Casanova Podcast. Kept you waiting, huh?
This wasn't written with your comfort in mind.
Nah.
Made my decision, wasn't tough to decide. Nah. Me and my boys, we get it done every time. Gotta earn it, you can't just jump in the line. You'll get rushed to the side. I top my division, I've been building since I started. In the parking lot, I parked it. I came in while picking targets. My career cannot be tarnished. I'm a champion regardless. Celebrate, but this is a different kind of lucha party. We are not alike.
I don't want your advice, I don't want your opinions. It's not gonna be different from the ones I told to listen. I've been working on a bigger picture and y'all ain't impressing me. Hey, como se dice, shut your mouth, respect the legacy. Ain't no comparisons, y'all just embarrassments. All of my confidence is rooted in my heritage. Yo, and with Mendoza and Mr. Wild, we showing what this about. Phantom driving, your career is disavowed. What's happening, y'all?
I need to get over being nervous.
Oh, we live.
Okay.
There's no point in being nervous. It's go time now. You can't run away. I mean, you've got control over the button, but basically I have you here now, and there's nothing you can do about it. So you might as well just lean in.
Oh, man. Welcome, everyone, to the Casanova Podcast. Again, this is... I can't believe it's been...
It's been a while.
Two and a half, almost 3 years?
I mean, I really think the last conversation we had, I mean, I've been cyber stalking you, so I know what
you're
doing.
Right, stuff, right.
But I mean, I think the last face to face conversation we had was pre pandemic. So it's been a grip.
Good Lord. Anyways,
I mean, that's the reality of it, right? You feel like you keep up with your friends on social media and then you realize like, oh no, but I haven't spoken to you in over a year. So, yeah. Like, how you doing?
Jeez. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. But, you know, again, Juan, thank you so much for coming on the show. People,
sure.
If you haven't already, make sure you go follow Juan on Twitter, on YouTube, Some Gadget Guy. Great, amazing content. And
yeah, we need all the real people to follow us because we're having another sub purge of all
yes.
the bots. So
yes.
my sub count will look 10 people less healthy by the end of the week, I suppose. We'll see how that goes.
And even looking at that, like the whole thing with how, I know we were talking before the show started, like how YouTube has changed, like, and just content creating in general, like it's crazy time. How like, you know, before it's like you had to have certain metrics. Like it's funny. I remember there's another content creator. I think what's his name? I think it's Jay Will. And no shade on him. I remember he said a couple of several years ago. Yeah, he is. And I remember he said like at one point like you had to have 10,000 subscribers, and that was mm-hmm. that was true. Like you had to have that for a lot of companies to consider working with you. And it's changed so drastically, like even within the last year or 2 years. And I think also the pandemic playing into it, like you were saying before, like the, you know, with TikTok and Instagram now having more easily digestible content, it's mm-hmm. changing the game for a lot of companies. Like they need to be able to, well, one, hit their sales quotas, but also get mm-hmm. to as many demographics as possible. But what are your thoughts on everything out here, like for that topic?
You know, it's kind of interesting because I think we still keep trying to look at 21st century careers with mm-hmm. sort of a 20th century mindset. You pay your dues and you put in the effort and you put in the work and you get your raise and you get your promotion. And that's never been true. That's never been true in entertainment. That's never been true in multimedia. And that's certainly not true for social media, if you're making social media a significant part of your career. There are some generalities that we can point to. But, you know, when you were talking, I remember when I was kind of grinding my first couple thousand YouTube subscribers way back in the day. I mean, my first YouTube channel, I mean, predates Google owning YouTube. That's how long I've been futzing with online video. And
you
I was
know, you
reaching
know,
out.
Kids these days won't even know pre-Google, like pre-YouTube Google.
They'll never know. I mean, because like back then, I was grinding a Vimeo channel. I was grinding a Mevio channel. I was doing work with Blip.tv. I was considering whether or not I wanted to start co-uploading to the Google video service, mm-hmm. not just YouTube. I mean, that's the Wild West that we had. And what we have now is an interesting case study in sort of consolidating all of those mm-hmm. opportunities into one or two buckets, and then watching how those companies no longer innovate, they just sort of circle each other. What is TikTok doing? We could do something like that. Oh, mm-hmm. maybe we want to try and compete with Netflix. No, probably not. And now it's not about innovating for the platform, it's about trying to ape the success of another company that's coming up. But that could be a whole 2-hour YouTube documentary that no one will watch. So when you kind of hear those generalities, like, oh, well, I needed 10,000 subscribers before someone would take me seriously. Some of my best early work, I maybe had, you know, 3,000, 3,500. I mean, back then, that was a lot more than it is today. You know, their inflation's mm-hmm. hitting everybody, kind of a thing. But it's really more about the approach, what kind of content you're doing. Are you presenting yourself in a professional way? Are you sympathetic to the messaging that's coming out from that company? Do you kind of fit in with the marketing? There's so many different little bullet points. And I think some companies have seen, when you look at like Instagram Reels and TikTok, someone with a small number of subscribers or followers can still have an incredible impact if they're making the kind of content that they're trying to show off. So speaking at this is from like a branding and advertising perspective, I'm of the mind, you go for it, you make your content, you reach out to companies, you don't pitch on, I've got 100,000 subscribers. And my 100,000 subscribers don't mean anything because I make the videos that I want to make. Mm-hmm. So I think right now I'm at 139,000. Let's see if the YouTube purge drops me much, much lower than that. But at 139,000, if I make a quirky little editorial about camera aperture sizes, because that's the video I want to make, I know that video is only going to get like 1,500 views. And I really don't care, because my gig on YouTube isn't, I need to maximize my impact of SEO reach on popularity topics to satisfy the algorithm. I'm using YouTube for free server storage. I just don't want to have to host videos on my own dime. And that's all I care about for using YouTube. So this subscriber purge is hitting, and you're like, I don't even know how many subscribers I have.
Right.
I should probably look to see how many I dropped. So I looked it up last night, and from last night to today, where I think they're starting to churn, I think I'm down 15. So the nail biter of how far will I drop in the ranking so far hasn't been too terrifying.
So touching on the topic of SEO. So I've been in a couple of Clubhouse.
You got hands on with some YouTube gurus,
right?
Did they guru you? Did they give you the full scoop on how to be totes successful? Do the kids still say totes?
They say totes.
Oh, totes McGoats.
So
I'm sorry.
Crazy.
I don't mean to speak up, because there are obviously different mentalities and different reasons to get in. And if you're really seriously looking at YouTube as a business, do not try to emulate my style of production. My style of production was vetted in the early days of YouTube, when we were looking at completely different metrics for success, video lengths, topics. And I have the momentum of having had that as my on-ramp. That my on-ramp was that. And those are still the videos and the stories that I want to tell. So I'm going to keep making the stuff that I want to make. I really don't care about what the current zeitgeist is at YouTube. But if you're getting started today and you're looking at different metrics for success, and especially for monetization, because that stuff gets tricky, there's a lot of value to having those kinds of conversations about SEO and trending topics and thumbnails and all that stuff. And it's this, I could not care less. That is not what impacts my choices for making a video, telling a story, explaining a topic. I that's not the audience I want. I don't want the audience that only apes the top five trending topics and hashtags. I want an audience that's a little bit more interested in digging into nuance. Mm-hmm. And those are the videos that I want to make for them. And it's a much smaller audience. Again, that audience is always going to be tactically smaller than, you know, sort of a broader, more successful channel. But those are the geeks that I want to hang. That's the lunchroom cafeteria table that I want to sit at. You know, we can debate the finer differences between Magic the Gathering or Vampire, the Eternal Struggle. Which collectible card game are we going to play this week? That I'm a Bruja and I want to play against a Ventru deck and I want to make sure I've got good ranged damage. You know, like that's the gig. So I don't mean to completely knock your Clubhouse experiences, but coming out of casting and coming out of Hollywood and voiceover commercial work, it always makes me anxious when someone is selling the lifestyle of that kind of work. Someone is selling the life of voiceover and you go and take their workshops and their classes and you'll get access to industry, to the top minds in the industry. You'll get access to talent agents and you'll get access to casting directors. And that person hosting the class can't tell you, you take my class, I'll get you an agent, because that would be against the law. Mm-hmm. That would be illegal. But they can sell you this beautiful idea of you'll get FaceTime with someone in the industry. And Clubhouse to me kind of rang a little bit of that seedier side of entertainment. Mm-hmm. Join Clubhouse. We'll keep out the Android riffraff for all of you precious iPhone users, and you'll get access to top minds in these various industries that are billionaires, and they can tell you, give you insight. And you sit in some of those Clubhouses, and they're like, I don't know, work hard and be consistent. And you're like, thanks, Dad. I could have figured that out on my own. But sorry, I've completely rambled through what you were trying to talk about. You were in a... rewind. You can cut all that out, I'm sure. You were in a Clubhouse. Tell me more. That sounds fascinating.
So you know, because I've been having a lot of people... I want to say, this Clubhouse been around for, a year or 2 years or something? And people were trying to really get me to hop into Clubhouse and get into these discussions. And, you know, from the game industry to tech industry and other content creators. And I'm over here like, man, I can either sit in on these Clubhouse conversations or I can try to get a 15-minute nap because my kid gives me a 15-minute window to do something. So, for sure. You know, for the longest I put it off, and I've sat in a couple of them, you know, recently, and, you know, especially some for like helping content, you know, people who want to get into making YouTube videos or get into this as a career. And a lot of the information that's given to people is exactly what you just said, you know, and people think there's this. You know, if I'm in this group, it's going to help me. I'm going to learn all this. And as I'm listening to people, they're talking about SEO and thumbnails and catering to like this and that. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, are you doing this to have fun? Are you doing this to make money? Because like, yeah, I do this full time, but I'm making content that I care about. And that took me a long time to realize I don't care about the trends. I don't care about this. Like if I cover a video game, if I cover tech, or if I cover anime or whatever I do.
Well, I mean, and you have a very similar problem to what I have is any given day, I might want to talk about a smartphone. I might want to talk about earbuds. I might want to talk about gaming gear. I might want to talk about, you know, tech and politics. You know, talk about a topic that is not SEO friendly. I want to talk about FCC and FTC regulations, and I want to dig into regulatory actions against massive data brokerage companies. Like, that to me is an interesting story, and I want to cover it. I'm not a journalist, but I'm newsy. So I think one of the reasons why so many of those Clubhouses feel so fruitless is because there truly is no path. Right. If you want to be a doctor, we've got a pretty regimented schedule of education and opportunities and expectations. obviously it's going to be different for every student that wants to be a doctor, and then you can specialize and you can go on to sort of hone in on what type of medicine or health that you want to study. But we kind of grok doctor, we kind of grok engineer, mm-hmm. we kind of grok lawyer. We know what that path looks like. And in entertainment and in multimedia and in content creation and on online media, everybody's story is horrifically unique. Yeah. I had this chance encounter, which led me to this opportunity, which then opened up this door, and now I'm hosting. I talked to this person, and I took these classes and workshops where I met my agent, and now I'm a voiceover actor. I went to school for theater, got a job in with the Department of Energy out of college, managing server systems and Apple systems, which led to casting and talent work in Los Angeles. And now I host and I produce content on tech topics. You know, like there is no path. So we try to latch on to these ideas that sound like secure foundations. Maximize your SEO. Just maximize, bro. Why aren't you maximized? Are you maximizing? I'm maximized. Can you max? I'm maxed. You know, like, it sounds like you're doing something. It sounds yeah. like you're really investing your time and your sweat equity and you're making the right choices. But all we're doing is exactly what I was saying before about like companies that just sort of mimic each other. Now all we're doing is just sort of mimicking a search engine. Mm-hmm. So if you can't enforce, I mean, that's why there are some people who are really good at this. They can look at all this data and they can come up with a story that's at least interesting or visually engaging, or they've got a really nice voice, so they've got a nice storyteller cadence that people just want to listen to. But you end up just mirroring what's already being sort of belched out at you from a search engine. I'll go to Google Trends and see which line is higher, and I'll make a video about that Google Trend topic. Well, yeah, it's already trending. What are you contributing to that conversation? Nothing. You're not. I've got a hot take. I've got a reaction. Oh, look at this shocked thumbnail that I've made. That doesn't mean anything. It's just noise. And so it's very difficult to sort of, in my opinion, it's very difficult to kind of define your role in this conversation. When I got started, it was like old TV. You know, like imagine a sitcom like Seinfeld going on the air today. Watch that first season of Seinfeld. Whoa, man, that's not really great. It took about three seasons for them to find the vibe of that show. Imagine any TV show today getting three seasons just to find their flow. When I got started, my channel was all over the place. I really didn't know what I was doing. I was an audio engineer. I had never worked or cut with video. I got all that runway just because video was a novelty. Just mm-hmm. because I could get a video up on the internet, I got special consideration just because video was hard. And from there, I'm still like changing up the look of my video and changing the tchotchkes on my bookshelf and doing all these other things because I think it's interesting and it keeps me happy. But that's enough to kind of keep people coming back to my videos. That entire exploratory doesn't really exist for people coming up today. It's almost like if you're not out of the gate with the hottest algorithm pleasing kinds of content, you're going to get buried on YouTube. Yeah. So you've got to find your footing from like the pilot, right? Mm-hmm. you've got to define your show from episode one. And it's also why so many pilots suck these days. It's like your pilot could have been an entire season of television, but you had to set up all these people, deliver all this exposition, set up a cliffhanger, solve the cliffhanger, set up another mystery, and then like also dig up some drama. Like there's so many shows and you're like, I'm exhausted watching that. I don't really need to see another season of this. This could have been a movie. It could have been anything else, but you had to kind of ruin, and they give up all their good stuff in like the first three episodes. So when you're sitting in a clubhouse and you're hearing all of this information, it's comfortable and it's safe, and there's nothing controversial about it, and it's really speaking to this is what success on the platform looks like. But my argument would be, how are you considering success for yourself?
Yes.
What does that look like? And if you can't answer that, that's okay, because it takes people a long time to figure that out. and give yourself the time to figure that out. And increasingly, as I get older, I am looking at every single opportunity I can take where my personal success is not tied to the whims of a platform. Mm-hmm. YouTube is a gatekeeper between me and my subscribers. Not every video I make really gets sent out to my subscribers, even if they smash bell icons. Instagram is a gatekeeper between me and my followers. Twitter is a gatekeeper between me and the people who follow me. Every one of these platforms has some kind of metric that keeps me, that keeps them in between me and the people that I want to interact with. And so increasingly, like, maybe it's a Patreon and that sucks because it's a paywall, but it's a paywall I control. Maybe it's a private Discord and that's how I engage with people and I can really just sit and chill and it's my safe space just to geek out and be a nerd. Mm-hmm. I still write a stupid blog which gets very, very little traffic, but literally there is nothing in between me and the people who subscribe to my blog. That to me is now, I feel safer, because if you got into YouTube 5 years ago, they had just shifted the algorithm to focus on more long form content. They were trying to rescue their relationship with animators. They were looking at originals. That's where we got, you know, they were starting to build the YouTube premium service. We got Cobra Kai. I mean, like, that's what YouTube was. But you know what? Google wasn't immediately successful with that strategy, so they dumped it, and now they're just trying to copy TikTok. So if you had invested in YouTube 5 years ago, trying to follow the algorithm and the SEO of the day, your content today would be significantly devalued in favor of short-form TikTok-y kinds of stuff. And if YouTube isn't incredibly successful with that over the next year, they're probably gonna shift focus again. So why invest all of this energy into YouTube if YouTube's gonna change the metrics on you in 18 months?
Exactly.
I agree with your agreeing with me. That's what I came here for.
It's amazing. Like, when people ask me, like, what do I need to do to get started? Like, what should I cover to be successful?
Pick up a camera. Literally, get started.
What do you want to talk about? You got a phone. Okay. You got a phone, smartphone, you got iPhone, Android, whatever. Use that, you know, invest in better audio. Just figure out how to do editing. Like, there's free stuff. There's paid stuff. Like, just invest in yourself and not, like, okay, so one thing I've started telling people for the last year, when they're like, oh, I want to be a YouTuber, I'm like, you want to be a YouTuber or you want to be a content creator? Because if the platform goes away...
Those are not always simpatico.
Right? So it's like, I'm like, you know, if YouTube went away today, then what are you going to call yourself? They're like, oh, I never thought about that. I'm like, yeah, you want to be a content creator because you want to create content no matter the platform that you're on. And so, you know, figure out what it is you want to do, because when you figure out what you want to do, which can take time, then you can have fun along the process. Like, don't get caught up in worrying about the subs and the views and all that, because honestly...
And I have to acknowledge, it's really easy for me to say, because I've got a pretty healthy sub count on YouTube. Like, I'm not huge, but I'm not tiny, right? Like, I'm in that sort of low-end middle of people that have gotten a plaque from YouTube for our years of dedicated service. I'm waiting on my retirement watch. It's going to be a real nice day when I can just retire from the platform. But it's tricky, because it's tricky for someone like me. I had a very similar issue when I was really doing a lot of work in casting. You get a lot of people that are anxious about jump-starting. They feel like if they can just ask the right questions, they're going to get some magical piece of advice that's going to shortcut some of the work. You get the same questions over and over and over again, and the only answers you can give are very basic, common-sensey kinds of things. What microphone should I buy? You're like, one that sounds good with your voice. Have you tried? What microphones have you tried? Use your ears, play with room treatment. I mean, like, I can't be in your office or in your closet helping you soundproof. You have to do that. I can't be in your bedroom helping you edit a YouTube video. you have to do that. But at the same time, I'm still yearning for that educational insight. You know, I still want to learn and I still want to grow. And I want to have those conversations with people that have shared some of my life experiences that we can kind of learn from each other and share and build and collaborate. And increasingly that becomes more difficult because there's so much focus on, you know, just rehashing the basics over and over and over and over again. But when you try and set up those opportunities, like, hey, you know, you've been at this game for a while. I've been at this game for a while. We've got some friends who have been at this game for a while. What have your experiences been? What are you doing? How are you feeling? Like, we all feel like we're a bit plateaued just because these machines are so out of our control. YouTube is out of our control. TikTok is out of our control. We're kind of in the winds, at the whims of what fad might be trending. Like, I've done a few dance challenges. I don't really want to keep doing them. You know, like, I've been, you know, kind of putting out a few Instagram reels and things like that. I really don't care about, like, their creator funds or what their payouts are, because I know as soon as the platform gets more popular, the creators are going to make less money because of their distribution split. So it sucks some of the fun out of our side because we're trying to still improve. And for some, that just means like, oh, I just want my shots to look more cinematic. For me, it's like, what stories haven't been told? What information are people really looking for? What's something new that I can learn that then I can share and reinforce what I've learned? And that's the kind of the hardest thing. Someone just coming up, you can make an amazing, badass YouTube video. You can make three amazing, badass YouTube videos. Where are you at in year 10? Because I'm in year 10. Actually, from the movie review show, I'm in year 13. I still want to find new stories to tell. That's 13 years of sitting in front of a camera, talking to myself, cutting that video up, shooting some B-roll, going outside, getting some fresh air, trying to play with my daughter. You know, like, Show me the longevity, show me the fortitude, and then we can start having conversations about, like, where do I go from here? Where do you go from here? How do we maintain? How do we sustain? And not just, like, tread water, but, like, do something that we can really sink our teeth into. And I think that kind of perspective is hard to glean when you're just getting started. Like, I'm talking to someone who had radically different experiences at the beginning of their journey than what I'm gonna face. So their advice on getting started probably won't apply to me getting started. But then I'm listening to them and there's these frustrations about how things have changed. So what I need to learn from that is, how do I adapt?
Right.
You know, not just like, oh, you listen to Cranky One, the YouTuber, and things were different back in my day. What you should hear from that is, these trends changed on me. I wasn't prepared for it. I didn't know how to handle it. I miss when I was more successful. Wham, wham, wham. Okay, boomer, get on with it. You know, like, you have to build the adaptability into your platform, because we see that change occurring on a daily basis. You know, like, just in this conversation, we talked about YouTube 5 years ago, we've talked about YouTube a year ago, we've talked about TikTok as a trend, we've talked about Instagram reels, we've talked about sub purge. Like, literally nothing has stayed consistent on YouTube, because Google doesn't work with consistency in mind. They pick up something, they drop it. They pick up something new, they drop it. And that's what you're beholden to when you're creating on someone else's turf.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And it's just the adaptability and being comfortable with change. Like, a lot of people I know, so I started on a platform of making YouTube videos about 6 years ago, exactly 6 years ago. And I can tell you from when I started and people who started with me, it's probably me and probably two other people that are still making YouTube videos out of, that I personally know, it's say 40 or 50 of us. And it's, a lot of people weren't comfortable with changing and adapting to the constantly ever evolving landscape. A lot of people thought, okay, I'm just going to stick in one particular drama, not drama, genre. I said drama. Yeah, it's early.
You know, at this point, kind of the same.
Yeah, you know, and
we're talking about YouTube. There's a lot of drama. Oh, so I feel like that was an appropriate Freudian slip. That's all.
And it's like, so like a lot of, like, you know, when I got started, it was, you know, the Nintendo Switch was coming out, and mm-hmm. you had a lot of channels that were like covering that exclusively. A lot of channels that started with me, they've blown up covering just the Switch. And then after they hit a certain point, they're like, okay, let me start covering this. Let me start covering news. Let me start covering tech. Let me start covering all this other stuff. And, you know, they were able to adapt and grow. A lot of other people are still just covering the Switch. And I'm over here like, okay, that's kind of boring. There's only so much. You know, like, if you're not willing to pivot a little bit to something else, and it's
dicey territory, because again, in for anyone who's listening to this and is sort of at the beginnings of some kind of content creation journey or tech review, that's kind of mm-hmm. you know, obviously my main focus is it's tricky because the algorithm also enforces and sort of celebrates, I mean, to your point, it celebrates drama. Mm-hmm. When you either pick the absolute most popular topics and ignore everything else so that your channel niches in a mm-hmm. way that YouTube can very easily sort of package to certain subscriber bases, or your channel shifts from talking about the thing to talking about people talking about the thing. And look at how many gaming channels. I mean, this is why gaming has become such like a toxic reservoir on YouTube, is, well, someone reviewed a game and I don't like the way they reviewed it, so now I'm gonna trash that reviewer, and that's entertainment. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's real people. It's not WWE. Like, but that's what YouTube reinforces. That got, you know, hate clicks. That got angry viewers. People left comments on those videos calling out the person, calling out the other reviewer. And then other people came in to defend them. And it's all just toxic drama. It's not a sitcom. It's not a nighttime soap opera. It's not professional wrestling. Those are real people. But they're real people acting like ridiculously manicured caricatures of reality TV personalities, which we all know mm-hmm. reality TV is fake. Can I swear on your?
Yes. Channel? Yes.
Okay. Is fake as shit. Reality TV is anything but real. And so now we're starting to pattern that into a computer process that rewards engagement and time on site at the expense of the mental health of everyone involved. Mm-hmm. Anyone participating with it, watching it, commenting on it, is leaving with their blood pressure raised, is leaving with that sick thrill of having really stuck it to them with a hot take, or, you know, I murdered by words that person. Mm-hmm. That's not good for you. That's bad for you. That is a neural pathway you should not want to create in your brain. But then the people actually making this kind of content, all this drama and everything, they've stopped talking about entertainment. They've stopped talking about video games. They're not sharing their playthroughs. They're not experiencing the joy. I mean, to their credit, I mean, like, say you got some friends that are still just niched down and they just love the Nintendo Switch and that's what they want to make videos about. Sure, their view counts probably suck, but they're probably happier people yeah. for not having pivoted where the algorithm wants them to go. So financial success, but yeah. mental health, probably better. So again, it's so dicey when we say, you know, like, oh, and you've got to be adaptable, you've got to be able to pivot. I think too often people mistake that for, I'm going to be hip to the current YouTube zeitgeist and feed the algorithm what it wants every time mm-hmm. it changes. Instead of saying like, well, how do I just grow as a person? Because you know what? It's a much smaller, I mean, can confirm, that's a much smaller audience of people that will follow you on that journey, but it is so much more satisfying when you meet someone in the comments and they're like, oh, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
I can have a conversation with you and there's a back and forth and you can criticize and I can respond. And that's so much more interesting than just, nuh-uh, someone else said Samsungs were better. So I think Samsungs are better. and you're like, you're a hollow mouthpiece of another YouTube creator who doesn't even share that opinion. They're just making videos on a topic that makes them more money. Mm-hmm. That is the worst cynical place to be in your life. And you've made poor life choices to get here.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of, like, so it's a video I did, I want to say 2 or 3 weeks ago as of this podcast recording, where mm-hmm. The whole situation with G4, and I think the person's name is Frosk or Froskin. So I did a video, it was a criticism, not of her, but of G4 and of mm-hmm. the gaming industry. And I prefaced the whole thing because I saw a lot of people were making, like, I saw it and I just was like, okay, so I remember when G4, before it was G4, I remember it was Tech TV. It was on Tech TV.
Yeah.
I remember like what it was in the late 90s, early 2000s. So my perspective was of someone coming from then to now, and how a lot of the toxicity in gaming, the gaming industry perpetuated.
Yeah.
You know,
again, I mean, that all becomes circular, you know,
right.
If a part of your market is trending in a direction that doesn't serve your shareholders, then you respond. But if it's a part of this is also like anger interactions that you can use to manipulate a certain player base mm-hmm. and get them to monetize, then you're going to lean into that too. We've seen exactly. it with movies. We've seen it with music. We've seen it with every other type of entertainment. But, you know, gaming got real precious with it because of the outsider status. Mm-hmm. At the time that people were, you know, like, people still act like gaming is this little side hobby venture thing that little kids like to play the video games. Are you going to play the Nintendo? No, Mom, I've got a PlayStation. You know, like, they still think of that when gaming has eclipsed, you know, Hollywood box offices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like Apple. Apple still acts like they're the plucky little upstart, but they're a $3 trillion mega corporation that's heavily entangled in every aspect of your waking life. That's not a plucky little up. That's not thinking different. They are IBM now. And gaming has kind of existed in that where they could fly under the radar for some things, but then they were hyper scrutinized for others. And the psychology of that has now ratcheted up significantly as we've been stuck at home for 2 years.
Yeah.
What growth industry did we really see? Movies weren't doing so hot with theaters shut down. Gaming surged. So yep. now we see gaming as the juggernaut that it really is, with the influences over people that it really commands, and how the marketing into that can be extremely aggravating, and it can exacerbate a lot of these topics and conversations. At the same time, they've never made more money than they have today. They're laughing mm-hmm. all the way to the bank on these types of shenanigans. So it's a difficult web to untangle, because individual experiences get held up as community data.
Yeah.
You can say, like, here's a statistic, and statistics are math and numbers, so they can't be controversial, says every sort of alt-right talking mm-hmm. mouthpiece in any type of nuanced conversation. And then they can conflate that against, this was my experience as an individual, and this is how I was harmed. And then you get a bunch of angry people saying, but that hasn't been my experience, so you need to shut up and sit down. And just repeat ad infinitum. You know, like, mm-hmm. we keep talking past each other because it's not about actually sharing these experiences and learning from them and growing from them. It's about, did I get the last word in some kind of witty, pithy hot take that's going to be summed up in a beautiful little screenshot on Twitter? And that's not how life works. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not even a, well, both sides suck, because that's that sort of enlightened centrism never really helps progress anything. We've got to go through culture clash, and we've got to go through these sort of growing pains. And then out the other side, we hope that we're better than when we went in. Right now, I don't believe the influences of social media, of marketing, of advertising, and of manipulating people to make them at their angriest to profit mega corporations are going to help us come out better on the other side. I think instead it's just going to make us more insular and more divisive.
That was kind of the point I was hitting at when I did the video on that. I was talking about all of that, and it feels like
it's a lot. So
it is, and like I was accused of being alt right because you know they were like saying like, oh, you're using alt right talking points. I'm like, no, I'm not. I said, I'm not even criticizing her. I'm criticizing the industry. I'm in the gaming industry. I see the bullshit of the gaming industry. And it's, as a, and if you really understood, a lot of these industries are laughing all the way to the bank. They're manipulating people with marketing. And it's sad.
It's difficult because
don't see it.
I think if I remember what it is that you were talking about, I can't remember her name, but you're talking about her like epic rant about females being objectified and things like that. And having done a lot of hosting work, I never intended to be on camera. I always wanted to be a casting director and a voiceover director. I wanted to work with other actors and performers. And it's a weird, very strange turn of events that I ever had to put myself up on camera. I suffer extremely bad psoriatic flare-ups where my face can just turn into scar tissue if I'm having a bad week, and it can take a month for my skin to not look like aged leather. And I've also worked with some female presenters at the top of their game. I've worked with some of the most incredible female hosts that it's interesting to see what their experiences have been. So when it's really going to bug me, I need to look up what her name is. This is Frost, not productive.
Froskin, I think, or Foreskin.
G4TV hosts. I know this is great podcasting right here. Just shut the whole thing down.
No, go for it.
It's Attack of the Show, right?
Yes. And so, like, you know, my whole stance was with that because I remember how that channel, like how that organization started, like I said, back with the Tech TV days, how they were using the objectification of women, how it shifted away from that. But it's like not only them, but the industry as a whole are, you know, they play a part. There needs to be an accountability of the industry. Like, okay, you created part of this beast. Right. That you're now,
but we'd also have to separate her from that machine. And actually, that's what I think was kind of brave about the way that she spoke up was she was not trying to play that game that was expected of her from previous generations of hosts, and the backlash that she faced for speaking out on that. The fact that she was so upset and that her co-hosts had nowhere to go. You just saw those real uncomfortable looks on the other dudes sitting on the couch. That speaks to me that she's probably been nudged numerous times in her career to maybe, you know, feminine things up a bit, maybe girl things up a bit. Maybe you need to spruce up this look. And that's not the game that she wants to play. So now she gets her dream job, you know, hosting Attack of the Show. I mean, that's, or is it X-Play?
Both. She's on both.
Okay, so she's on both.
She's on both.
Imagine you're hardcore gamer. If you're a dude, I mean, you show up looking like I am now. You know, ratty hoodie, ball cap. I haven't trimmed. I need to shave. You know, like, that's X-Play. Bam, I play video games. I'm a bro. But that's not her experience. She doesn't get to just show up and play games. She's got to be held to a completely different standard that she has never participated in, and she's never walked that walk in her editorial career that I know of. Again, it's, and even if she had, you know, when I was in college, I was a dance minor. I was in really good shape, and I had headshots showing off that I was in really good shape. So now, should I be objectified and defined my entire career as a hot stud on the dance floor, even though now I'm 2 years into a pandemic and I'm really soft around the middle? You know, like, just because a Morgan Webb took some racy photos for a magazine doesn't mean her entire career is now defined by one aspect of one part of a promotional period in her life, and that her opinions on the rest of the video gaming industry have to be judged against her hotness. You know, like,
exactly. that's
what's so tricky is I don't know that us dudes as gamers can always fully understand some of the pros and cons of being a super hot chick talking about tech or a super hot chick talking about gaming. I was with one of the hosts that I did a lot of my work with. She would always talk about how she would leave a really potentially lucrative hosting gig or editorial gig, and they'd kick her out because it wasn't that she wasn't hot enough. It was that, you know, what she really needs to do is get one of those asymmetrical haircuts and dye like one side purple. And what you should do is stop wearing your contacts and wear glasses, because then you'll be a nerdy gamer chick. And that's how you be a nerdy gamer chick, says five white dudes in their 50s in a boardroom trying to promote this kind of gaming as lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got a host that's obviously facing those kinds of criticisms, probably internally from producers or from at least other people that are kind of close in that circle of production, and then she's likely getting just pooped on all over the place on social media because of some arbitrary metric of rated hotness. I completely understand that meltdown. I completely get it. I get like stealth pangs because I'm pale skin, but I'm Hispanic. And, you know, I get a lot of people that approach on certain understandings of racial divides in technology or in telecommunications and then start speaking with confidence about, you know, the plight of African Americans or the plight of Latinos or the plight of Native Americans. And boy, that's not always a great look for people who don't mm-hmm. understand what those people are going through. But then you try to educate them on that and they're immediately defensive. And I think gamer dudes are starting to get a taste of that now. You're coming in confidently speaking about the history of women in gaming when you've never been a woman in gaming. And the reality of that looks significantly different than what you think it does. But if mm-hmm. you listen for just a bit, you'd understand this is an individual who is facing some kind of challenge in her career. And she's trying to share that information with you, and just a little bit of compassion would take nothing away from your gaming experience, but would leave you better understanding what she as an individual is going through. Doesn't matter what other women in gaming have done. Doesn't matter what other corporations have done to women in gaming. It only matters because she's only sharing her experience in that moment.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that people don't want to be receptive to that, you know.
But again, it's ratcheted because Twitter gets your time on site, YouTube mm-hmm. gets your watch time. There was another one. I can't remember what reviewer it was, but he tore into was it Days Gone or was it Last of Us? I don't remember. There's so many.
I remember both were getting hammered, both those games.
But again, it was like, after a point, angry gamer dudes on YouTube weren't even trying to defend the game. They were just trying to savage reviewers that they didn't agree with. Yeah. And you're like, what are we doing? A very similar thing happens to me in smartphone reviews. I'm not a big fan of Samsung. I don't like how they treat their customers. I don't like their business practices. I think they've got one of the most punitive public relations entities for their organization. If you don't toe the line, there are consequences and you lose early access. I do not like how Samsung does business. So when I have critical words about Samsung, I get death threats from Samsung Knights that disagree with my assessment of Samsung as a corporation. You know, it's we stop sort of acknowledging like I'm using this phone and I've got issues with this phone and I wish they could clear these things up and I wish they'd stop getting rid of these features. How dare you criticize Samsung? They're the number one in sales. And you're like, does that matter? When did that matter? Do you want a Toyota Corolla or do you want a Lamborghini? I mean, one sells a lot more than the other. So like this kind of reviewer echo chamber circle jerk
mm-hmm.
is reality ginned up outrage commentary because it keeps people engaged on YouTube, and YouTube loves that, you know. Yeah. So again, it's becoming less and less and less like, hey, I was playing this game and I like this game and these are my experiences. Increasingly, I go to Twitch and just watch people play instead of going to game reviews, because halfway through the game review, here's this guy who's as schlubby looking as I am ranting about how this African-American reviewer gave this game a bad review because of the portrayal of people of color, and they're obviously too woke to understand how games work. Fists in the air. Aren't you angry about the wokeness too? And you're like, but what about the game? Like, right? I think he's right. I think the game sucks. Doesn't matter. No, I think the, you know, you're angry about his portrayal of the criticisms of this game, but he wasn't wrong. See, and so instead, I'll follow some people on Twitch and just watching them play through the game instead of a stupid reaction video. You know, like in YouTube, it's all reactions. Like, you've brought nothing to this conversation. You're just sitting here watching a piece of media that someone else created, and pausing it occasionally. Go, that was dumb. You should have made it better. And then playing it again, and then you'll pause it. That one was kind of funny. And then you pause it and you play it again. And you're like, that's so, it's so reductive an experience. And instead, like, I miss those days where I would hang out with my buddies in front of a Super Nintendo and we'd all, like, try and claim dibs on who would get to play next, because at best only two people could play at a time, but there were seven of us in the living room. And I want that experience where we can actually shit talk the game in real time. I can't. YouTube ain't the place, and YouTube has died for that kind of commentary. I gotta go. I gotta go somewhere else. You know, I'm trading one massive mega fuck off corporation for another, but at least their version of a massive mega corporation video streaming platform is built around sharing gameplay. So I'll go there instead. I don't know. It's just, you know, we see the same thing happening in tech. You know, it's not about, you know, reviewing the laptop. It's about leaking, being the first. You know, the people who get the most hits on a video aren't the people with the most insight on the product. They're the people who literally in your comments would write first. You know, we got press photos leaked before the announcement. First! And you're like, you have nothing to contribute. You are a non-contributing zero, but you were first. Great. And that's what passes for, like, big views on YouTube, right? And I'll get the phone, and I'll use it for a month before I'll put out a video. Guess whose video is not going to get as much traffic? But you know what? I sleep better at night, so I'm okay with that. And that's, I mean, just kind of bringing it back around, because, you know, I can do anything but not talk about me.
No.
It's the sadness that I feel, because I feel like when YouTube was more experimental and was more Wild West and was kind of a crazier place to be, you found a lot more stuff. You shared a lot more stuff. And YouTube as it exists today is only what's kind of working, what's the safest play, and what's the sort of like, what's the easiest, low effortless way that I can keep people mindlessly clicking through a catalog of videos that have lots of sound and fury but say nothing?
Yeah.
And a lot of, and I mean, again, and a lot of the gaming community, I think, is suffering because there are hardcore nerds out there that want to talk about games. And they want to share games. And they want to play games. And that's withering. It's decaying on YouTube. I mean, it's healthy on podcasts. It's super healthy on podcasts. Don't feed into these YouTube metrics and algorithm metrics, but just listen to two big old dorks talking about games. Oh man, some really good podcasts out there that share a broader overview with more representation and more people participating. That's not what YouTube gaming is anymore. Mm-hmm. And that makes me sad, because it should be leading the charge, but instead it keeps being reactionary to whatever whim or trend is happening, and then it changes, and then YouTube devalues you know, what some kind of commentary or insight might benefit monetarily, and then it just becomes toxic. You watch one video on like a science topic, and three videos later, you're getting flat Earth propaganda because that's beneficial yeah. for YouTube. That's financially advantageous. And we as techies think we're above it. But if it didn't work, YouTube wouldn't do it. So the same thing that we mock flat earthers for is happening in mobile phone reviews, is happening in game commentary. It's descending to this toxic lowest common denominator, you know, idiocracy. And we think we're not being influenced by it, but we're absolutely being influenced by it.
It makes me think of the Surface Duo 2, which I've seen. I want to dive into this.
The phone that I desperately miss because I've got this stupid Z Fold 3 sitting on my desk right now. I said that just to make a few Samsung fans bristle. I mean, the Z Fold 3 is actually a beautiful piece of engineering. I'm being snarky on purpose. But yeah, I'm traded with TK. I've got my Duo 1 here, which finally got Android 11, only a year later than when they said it would. But I really do miss my Duo. I love that phone.
So, okay. So one of the things like I've noticed about that, also shout out to TK Bay. Love his content.
I'm wearing his hat. I'm sporting his merch. He's my brother from another mother.
So like, okay. And this goes into the tech and YouTube zeitgeist mm-hmm. where I saw, and I've gotten to try the Surface Duo 2, and I'm like, I love this. It's not for everyone. But for mm-hmm. those who it's for, it's a phenomenal device, phenomenal piece of tech. And yeah. it's crazy how when certain people bash it, then it's like you hear the echo chamber just follow. You hear the video, you see the videos just, they're just echoing it. You know, it's the same mm-hmm. talking points, and it becomes frustrating. And this goes into what you were saying before about like finding the originality and creativity on the platform, because I have to dig to find people who aren't yeah. just
slamming,
copying.
Just to slam yeah. it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's an incredible challenge. I mean, I want people to try this today. You know, anyone who's listening to this show, go find a tiny little YouTuber who maybe hasn't even hit monetization yet. Go find a channel with like under 500 subs and click subscribe, and then see who does YouTube recommend you follow next. If you like videos that talk about tech and smartphones, you must like these other channels that have tens of millions of subscribers. For the last 2 years, I mean, again, I kind of revitalized my little subreddit leaning into the pandemic. I've gone out of my way to find every single little tiny YouTuber channel just starting up talking about smartphones and tech and laptops and consumer electronics that I could. And 2 years of that, every single time I hit subscribe, YouTube's like, but what about this big channel? Find this big channel. You like tech, eat this. And you're like, I could not have given you more data that I am looking for something specific. And my viewing habits are supporting very specific creators. I am constantly in the chat on live streams from very specific creators that I genuinely enjoy their content. And the second I engage with YouTube as a platform, it's like, but what about this guy? This guy's got 10 million subs. And it's like, again, the algorithm doesn't really do what Google claims it does. Mm-hmm. Like for example, last 2 weeks, I've not been in a good place mental health-wise. I've been on more of a depressive streak. And when I recognize about this about myself, one of the things that helps me claw out is going through Creepyville mm-hmm. in content. I dig into horror, ARGs, weird things on the internet videos. Like, I go dark. Mm-hmm. And it's not great. I need to find a new therapist. I need to take better care of myself. But I do recognize this as a trend in my own habits of mm-hmm. mental health highs and lows. And 2 weeks of, you know, darkest things on the internet, you know, ARGs and Wendigoon and Nightmind, and I'm missing so many channels that I've been subscribed to, and the stuff that I just love to, I mean, just like anything that kind of takes the real world. Gemini Home Video, oh my God, I love it. It's so good, it's so subversive, and it's eerie and it gives me nightmares at night, and I think that's kind of the thing I need to work through some of my own daily issues. And I go to my front page this morning and it's all like, well, here's a popular YouTuber talking about iPhones. Don't you want to watch that? And you're like, I have not watched a tech video. I mean, I've watched live streams, but I have not watched a tech video on YouTube in 2 weeks. And YouTube can't figure out what to give me. So the algorithm is not really servicing your trends as a viewer. It can't. I mean, I've fed it so much data that cannot be what the mission of the algorithm is. The algorithm is absolutely sustaining and reinforcing the viewing habits of populations that best benefit YouTube's bottom line and statistically work to keep people on YouTube longer. And that to me is a travesty, because you've got all, Google has all my data. Google has it all. They know everything about me. And if they wanted to make more money off of me, it would be really easy. But that is obviously not what they're trying to do. And it doesn't take much effort to push back from that. You know, it doesn't take much. But again, it's like just enough of a hurdle that YouTube knows that they can kind of comfortably run it as long as they can, until the whims change. And now you want more TikTok-y videos. We can give you that too. We're Google. You know, like, that's what's so frustrating about all of this, is the apparatus has all the information it needs. It could be so much more successful at what it claims to do. And that's obviously not what it's really doing.
So one of the last topics I want to hop on before we go.
Sorry, but did you notice how I kind of circumvented Duo 2?
Yeah.
I was like, because like, again, if I just immediately confront tech YouTube, then they're like, oh, but you're just biased. And you're like, no, this is a trend in everything else. But if you were nodding along saying, oh, hey, yeah, I like to watch videos about scary movies, how come YouTube doesn't serve me more of those? The same thing is happening to your tech videos, too. So that was the little spoonful of sugar before I hit you with the medicine. You see how I do it? I come at you sideways. You don't even see it coming. I'm like a ninja.
No, I mean, it's so true, because like I follow a lot of I'm into wrestling, you know, and one of the things I dislike,
and tell me, because the wrestling community right now could, I mean, zero controversies from what I understand, right? Everything's just honky dory,
right?
Nothing
right?
to see here, folks.
Right? And it's like every time I'm trying to find like a channel that's like legitimately covering, like, okay, like, so like, I want some actual commentary on stuff. I don't want the clickbait. I don't want the top 10. I don't want, well, this is going on. Like, every time I find really good channels, like podcast channels, like one, shout out to my friend Don Tony, who Chris Van Vliet, like, because I like their type of content. And when I try to go find more stuff where people who know the business, who are in the business, I keep getting WrestleMania and what culture, and I'm like, I don't care about these wrestling insider term marks that aren't in the industry that think they know, but they don't know. Like, I want to listen to Booker T or Ric Flair, people who've been in it, who understand it. And
like, I'm way late to the game, but I just watched that Jake the Snake documentary.
Right?
So good.
Right?
So good.
Right? Like, I want more of that and less of this, the clickbait. So it's, you know, going back to what you said, like, it's just YouTube, just, they're feeding their bottom line. They have our data, but they're not tailoring towards us. So,
no. So I mean, in dodging it and evading the question, you know, I look at those devices, I look at a Duo 2, And it's really easy to dismiss because it's unfamiliar. But when we compare it against something like the Fold 3, as these bendy folding mini tablets, you very clearly see, like, there's no right answer. And I'm very upset with tech reviewers that speak as if there's a correct answer. The conclusion is, by this, it's the best. We have a winner, and everything else is garbage. And there's no spectrum. There's no nuance. There's no shades of gray. You know, if I pick up a Duo, and it's this incredibly shockingly thin panel of a folding phone, like closed, the Duo is about the same thickness as most other phones, right? And consider camera bulges and stuff. And then I've got my buddy, so it's not really a fair comparison, but I've got my fold, my buddy's fold in a case, and you're like, that is 2.5 phones of girth lumped in my pocket. I don't want to hold this. I don't want to use it. So it doesn't matter if some of the features on the fold are better. The entire structure and philosophy of the design fails for what I want it to do. And if it succeeds for someone else, cool. But I don't know that anyone who's out there rocking a Fold 3, because they really put almost $2,000 of their own cash or a trade-in, so they got rid of another phone to reduce the price. I don't really know that they've spent the same type of quality time living with a Duo as they would have with the Fold. So all they have left is to reinforce how they feel about their own purchase, is just to repeat the same truisms about the Duo that they've heard since launch, but that's not the reality of using the Duo today. I heard the software was garbage. Yeah, it was. 2 years ago. Like,
it's your average consumer.
It got better. It didn't stay the same. You understand, like, as you've been getting updates on your Fold that made your Fold better, so did everybody else. And it's the same thing. It's like watching all of these nerds flip out about, like, the Pixel 6. Google had to pause the Android 12 January update on the Pixel 6. Okay, yeah. That is an embarrassing development for a software company putting out their own hardware. So where was all that same ire when Samsung had to pull the Android 12 update for the Fold 3, a phone that costs more than twice as much as a Pixel 6? That should be their crown jewel. You want the best customer support. You've put the most money into it. Well, but what Samsung's doing is they're waiting until they get it right, because they don't turn their customers into beta testers. They're not beta testers like the Googles are. That's different. It's different because Samsung and Google is bad. And you're like, that's way worse. That's, I mean, if we're putting dollars to, you know, to performance, like, that's not as good. That is more badder. In fact, the Fold 3 just got Android 12. You're like, where was Samsung? I thought they made the bestest software. What took them so long? How come we don't have anyone saying Samsung should issue a recall because their software is garbage? The selfie camera on the inside of the Fold 3 is still miserable. You should never use it. Like, where is this? Samsung's turning me into a beta tester because this is only half baked. Meh. The crease on this phone is ridiculous. Like, it bends light in the middle of your screen every single time you open it up in landscape. Anyone who says they can see past it must be using their folds in completely blacked out environments. Like, if I just open it right now, I don't even think it's on. It is on, but still, if, like, I just open it right now,
it's right there.
My top-down lighting, boom, you always have refraction. That's how bending pieces of plastic bend light and warp the image in front. It's always in your face. I have to go out of my way to shoot it with softboxes to minimize the trench. You can see the trench between the two panels. So that's not really much better than having two separate discrete displays when you're talking about multitasking and you're talking about using two apps at the same time. The Duo experience is better. So again, it's those kinds of nuances where it's easy for me to go down those rabbit holes. It's why I'm trying not to soapbox too much on them. But it's really sad because in tech commentary, the thing we've lost, like you were talking about wrestling commentary and you're tired of just marks just being hack and playing with top 10 lists and stuff. In tech commentary, we've lost the mission. We've lost the hearts and minds of finding the right fit gadget for the right consumer. if someone genuinely, the tiny niche of consumers who might be the right fit for a duo, if they're scared away from the duo and go get the fold, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to think this is a better phone because such and such mega YouTuber said it was a better phone. They're not going to know that they're missing out on the perfect fit for them because they're a much tinier demographic. They're a niche of a niche of a niche in terms of productivity, mobile tablet use, and Android as an operating system. And that's what we lose. We lose the vibrance, we lose the community, we lose the discussion. And every single time someone leaves the tech community because, yeah, the whole group got really lit up about this new Galaxy, but it wasn't any better for me. You know, I don't think I'm gonna watch these tech channels anymore. I don't think I'm getting good advice. We don't get that person back. We don't replenish our ranks. Tech commentary on YouTube, just like what we were talking about with gaming commentary, it's withering and it's dying. And we're not bringing in new members. We're not being inclusive. We're not being welcoming. Hey guys, I just got this new cheap Motorola and I love it. Oh, that's a stupid phone. Why didn't you get an iPhone, 11 instead? You're like, well, yeah, that person's never coming back and they liked their Motorola. What did it harm you that someone liked a phone that's different than the phone you own? And so that's why I'm so hypercritical of the market leaders. You know, again, I hold Apple and Samsung to the standard that they market for themselves. If Apple and Samsung are going to claim that they are the top market leaders, thought leaders, marketing leaders, sales leaders in this industry, then they need to be held to an incredibly high standard. They should not be given the considerations. They shouldn't be given the breaks. We shouldn't grade them on a curve because they have all the money and all the resources. They should never make the mistakes if we believe they are as good as they say they are. Microsoft doesn't make phones. It is very clear when you hold a Duo, Microsoft doesn't know how to make a phone, but they make incredible tablets. And that's what's interesting here is, you know, again, it's a tablet that can kind of make phone calls. I am willing to go with Microsoft on this journey also because I know at the end of it, it's not going to look like what it looks like today. If we saw the original Surface to now, like the Surface Pro 8, very different, right? We see how that's changed. And I want to be along for that ride because that ride's way more fun. That ride is way more exciting. And in the next year or two, I'm hoping that we'll see a Duo with Windows instead of Android. I mean, I just can't wait. I'm salivating for when that might happen. And all the nerds, oh, Microsoft betrayed us. And you're like, no, you weren't paying attention to what the mission was. The mission was not, can I make the best Android phone? The mission was, can I make the best folding tablet that fits in your pocket? And at some point, Android doesn't get that job done. Some Windows on ARM with Android app support, like we're seeing in Windows 11, is going to get that job done. And I want to be on the bleeding edge. I want to be on the tip of that spear. I want to see where that ride takes us. And I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is because I've bought both Duos. You know, like that was not cheap. So that to me is where we keep losing sight of what this stuff could be. I'm so tired of the tech reviewers that only reinforce what's already popular. You know, we don't have heads-up displays in glasses because all of the companies that tried early all got shit on. You know, like, again, to be fair, those companies probably would have failed on their own just for being too ambitious and trying to push the technology ahead of what consumers were comfortable with. But at the same time, you didn't need the tech enthusiasts also shitting on those companies, right? Oh, just wait for Gen 4. By then, they'll have it right. Well, yeah, that company went out of business. So now I don't have cool heads-up display glasses because of asshats just sitting on their hands waiting for it to be perfect when it was never going to be perfect, and we all would have had to experience teething pains along the way, but it was getting really good before they pulled the plug. And that's a bummer because I think we've kind of lost that to Apple's marketing department. I think we've lost it to Samsung spending $12 billion a year advertising the Samsung label. And the next time you go into a carrier store and you see why the Galaxy S22 is so expensive And they've been cutting features out of that phone over the last 3 years to make it less phone at a higher price. You can understand why, because they've got to pay for $12 billion a year of marketing. So that's what you get to contribute to. No charger in the box, no headphone jack, no memory card expansion, no magstripe, lower resolution displays, plasticky build quality, and mediocre cameras compared to their even more expensive premium tier phones. The Galaxy S is now a joke. But yeah, you know what? You still get to be Team Samsung, so doesn't that feel good supporting that Samsung bottom line? Isn't that, you pull that phone out of your pocket and you say, hey man, this is less phone and it doesn't perform as consistently as my old Galaxy S10. But you know, I at least feel better that Samsung shareholders are getting their money's worth by owning that Samsung stock. I mean, that I'm contributing to the future of a capitalistic endeavor. That feels real good knowing that that's how my dollars were spent.
So how do you really feel about Samsung Knights?
All right. Take them or leave them.
All right. So the last thing I want to touch on before we go
for sure
is okay. So, you know, I know you brought up mental health and, you know,
I mean, that's been on display this whole conversation too. So
no, but it's a very real thing. And I like that we're finally able, you know, like, it's becoming more of a mainstream topic because it's a very real thing. But from the perspective of a creator, like, and we kind of said this like before we started this recording, but it's like with us, we're both parents, you know, we have spouses, we have the content we make, we have our daily lives. And it's like, when people are like, okay, just create. Trying to be in that creative space, and I've tried to explain this to people before, but trying to stay in a place of being like this creative or creative space 24/7 is almost impossible. Yeah. Or just jumping into it, mm-hmm, just like that is impossible. What are your thoughts on that? When people think, oh yeah, just create.
Yeah, it's easy. I mean, It's a perpetual challenge, and it's why we probably have such unhealthy lifestyles, you know, like why we're neither of us getting as much sleep as we probably should. The creative side of the endeavor, you know, it's a challenge because you sort of look at it from the outside and then you try to explain highly emotional behavior from some sort of rational standpoint, and that's never true. It's highly irrational emotional conditioning. You know, when I get a spark or an inspiration, there's nothing rational about that process. I didn't plan to be inspired and come up with a really great idea for a video on Thursday at 3:37 p.m. You know, like, it comes when it comes, and you've got to try and catch it, and then you've got to try and convert it, and then you've got to try and make it meaningful to someone else. And so many of those moments pass and you're like, ah, that would have been a great piece. That would have been a great video. I really would have had fun with that. And then you've got to let it go. Yeah. You know, there are so many times where I'll have that spark of inspiration, not be able to execute on it. I just killed another video where it was like, I was even partway through editing it and realizing like, what I wanted to do when I had this idea versus what came out 3 days later when I tried to replicate that moment of inspiration is hot garbage. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like this. I don't think anyone who's going to watch this is going to like this. I've already sunk enough time in it. Why even put the final polish on it? I'm just going to let it go. I mm-hmm have to let it go. And there's that sunk cost fallacy. Like, I've already put so much time into it, I might as well go ahead and put it. And you know, like, I've seen some content creators like, not, I mean, I'll use a phrase like really shoot themselves in the foot. But I had a buddy who tried to put out this like biting commentary on BlackBerry, and immediately you just saw in the comments like he just got savaged, and he mm-hmm was like, no, none of them understood what I was saying. And you're like, yeah, but I don't think you understood what you sounded like when you were trying to say what you said. And he ended up pulling the video. And you know what? Like, you went through all that effort, you finished the video, you uploaded it, you took the hit on all the thumbs down buttons, you got all those angry comments, some people unsubscribed. You could have just pulled the video beforehand. If you're starting to get that sense, you're starting to get that spidey sense that, like, something isn't wrong. It's one of, like, I mean, this is sort of tangential to that, but there's this brilliant old editorial. I think it was Village Voice. I can't remember the name of the author, but he wrote A History of Violence, the screenplay for A History of Violence. And the name is something like, the title of the editorial is something like, "No, I will not read your fucking screenplay," because he's a writer. And he details this experience where a friend of a friend hits him up and says, "Hey, you got to read this treatment. I know you're, you know, really busy and stuff. You're a writer." And he's like, "You know, I can't. I'm a professional writer. I read scripts. I write scripts. This is, like, my job. I can't take time away from the people that depend on me to actually." And like, through all of these little social pressures, he eventually caves. And the guy sends him this treatment, and it's, like, barely incoherent English language that's, you know, not even formatted. And he's, like, struggling because, like, you know, what do I say to this guy? Do I try and encourage him? He's really not a writer, but everyone thinks that they can write the next hot, you know, Hollywood mega blockbuster screenplay. And he's getting to the end of submitting, like, his thoughts on it when the guy hits him up again and is like, "Hey, if you haven't read through my treatment, wait, I've just polished it up and I've changed a bunch of things and I want you to read the new thing that I've just put out." So he finally gets it and he gives all this feedback. And he's being very constructive because in a professional endeavor, what sounds like being mean is actually just blunt, right? Like, I'm just getting to the point. It's the same thing, like in American Idol. Mm-hmm. You know, Simon Cowell was always looked at as the mean one. But if you looked at, like, Randy and Paula, they would be there, like, laughing and mocking people while they were performing. And Simon Cowell would just sit there. And then he would say, like, you really aren't a singer. You shouldn't do this. So what was meaner? Someone directly saying, like, this is not a professional endeavor for you, but go have fun singing. Or two people mocking that individual. But then, you know, being really fake and flowery about, "Oh, you just keep going. You just keep getting, you'll get to your dreams. Just believe in yourself." Oh, my God, that person sucks so bad. You know, like, so what was really cruel?
Right?
Was it meaner to pull the Band-Aid off and say, like, "I'm a professional record producer, you don't got it," or make fun of them and ape them and mock them and then reinforce their delusion that they could eventually be a singer? And so that article also kind of feeds into kind of a whole way that I've been trying to live my life. Like, I could be the asshole up front and save myself 6 weeks of grief of having to deal with this kind of BS, or I could put myself through all of this ire and come out the other end with a product that I don't really believe in. And so it's like knowing when to pull the plug, knowing when to put yourself out there, knowing when you've got a window to work on something. You've got to try and schedule for the work of being creative so you have the opportunity to catch the inspiration when it strikes. It's tough on the family. You've got to juggle a lot of responsibilities and sort of be also ready to be fluid when something hits. You're like, "Oh, I've got to take Lex to the doctor. I mean, she's running a fever." Or, "Oh no, Marie has a bit of a cough and now she's going to be down. She's working from home. That's going to change up what I'm going to be taking. I got to take care of dinner tonight. She's going to do this. I'll tackle the dishes." You know, like, it's like you're constantly in a state of hyper-stimulated agitation. And somewhere in there is a fun YouTube video. So you also have to recognize when that happens. So it's really hard. I mean, so many of us are just beginning these conversations with any kind of earnest in public. And even the language and the terminology that we use is still, like, work and productivity focused, not emotional health focused. So it even takes us longer to kind of explain and meander and wander through what it is that I'm trying to describe, just because, like, I don't have the vernacular to approach this as a meaningful conversation. I'm still figuring that out for myself. And that's, I think, one of the things I've just tried to be a little bit more public about, because then I think it also helps inform some of the expectations from people who like my videos. You know, where am I coming at when I'm, you know, knocking, you know, this phone or when I'm celebrating that phone? I'm not an objective automaton. Anyone who claims that they can be objective in a review is lying to you, because we're humans and we have preferences and we have bias. But if you know where I'm coming from and you understand what it is that I'm trying to accomplish, then you can understand why I'm grading certain features the way that I am, and you can apply that to what you care about, and you can, you know, absorb it or dismiss it. You know, like, you know what the rules are. But if I come to you and say, like, I am totally objective and I treat all phones the same, but most of my channel is only talking about these two companies, and somehow they always magically seem to be the winner, and wouldn't you know it, those are the two brands that I get paid the most money in ad revenue to talk about. Pure meritocracy. Objective as the day is long. I have no bias. I am a shell of a human. Well, I mean, I think we could, I'll sort of acknowledge that that's, it's probably not likely.
On that note, where can people find you? What are some things that you're working
They don't. They're running as far away as they possibly can. And I don't blame them.
Oh, my God.
No, but seriously, Some Gadget Guy, the blog is SomeGadgetGuy.com. If you search for Some Gadget Guy, you'll find the Twitch and the Twitter and the Instagram and YouTube.com/WanBagnell, Patreon.com/SomeGadgetGuy. I'm doing some hosting work for reviews.org. I occasionally pop up on Newegg. I might be jumping into another retail channel, just talking about like how to score good deals on tech. And hopefully I'll have some more information to share about that coming up very soon. Fingers crossed. That could be kind of fun. Like, it kind of supports a mission that I've had where if your phone's 2 years old, you should probably just keep it. Maybe go get a new battery for it, because it's probably not much better to flip it for a newer phone that has less features. You know, it's got a faster processor. You know, like, I'm very excited and very interested to see if I can, like, kind of shake that up. Like, hey, maybe if you're shopping some new gadgets, you should shop some older new gadgets. So you can be on the lookout for that, and I'll have more news to share hopefully soon.
Definitely. And links for everything will be in the description below. We got to have you back on more regularly, because these conversations.
How about not going 2.5 years before we get to chat again? It is a poor facsimile. I mean, I love, like, just kind of, you know, lurking on some of your other podcasts and streams and stuff, but not the same as having a face-to-face conversation.
True. And it's very refreshing. I love these conversations with you, and it just gives me life, because I'm like, literally everything you're saying is how I'm feeling about stuff. And I'm like, sometimes I feel like I can't be as critical about stuff as I want to, like when it comes to just the creator space, because it's like, then people assume, oh, you're just bitter. I'm not bitter. This is the bullshit.
That's okay.
I see.
You can be not bitter. I'll be bitter for all of us. I'll be the cranky old guy who's super bitter. You can all just kind of like, yeah, that guy's bitter. I'm, you know, there's some criticisms and stuff that I'd like to share. But Juan, he's like vinegar. And we can just roll that way. I'm fine playing the heel. You know, if we need to do that, then we can set up some marks. I'll be the heel, and you can come in as like, you know, the peacekeeper at the end of all this, and just kind of, I think we'll have a good cornucopia of entertainment there.
Because, God, I get so tired when people are like, come to me, they're like, oh, but you got this for free. It's not free. These products are not free. Like, there are deliverables and then all this other stuff that you have to do. And like, if I'm people are like, oh, are you being truthful in your video? Yes, because I'm talking about my usages for it. God, like, I have people that just, like, when I review monitors, they're like, you're not talking about the nits. You're not talking about this. You're not talking about that. You're not talking about the fan sound of the G-Sync. And I'm like, I'm talking about my usage of the monitor. What right. I do I've, with it.
I've got an Innocin art monitor over here, and I'm a little terrified because I can't speak as knowledgeably on color calibration, and that's kind of one of the main benefits of moving to an art monitor. And you're like, oh, a lot of people are going to be very frustrated with my take on this really fancy, expensive art monitor. But it's really nice, and I just want right? to say, like, I'm watching movies on it, and it looks really good. And then I'm playing a game on it, and it looks okay because it's only 60 hertz. But it's a really good monitor, so you know, we'll see how that goes.
All that being said, man, thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We'll definitely stay more in touch, and we'll do this again. And yeah, people, if you haven't already, make sure you go follow him on Twitter, on Twitch, sub to his YouTube channel, check out his website and the podcast. Man,
I make a lot of stuff.
Yes,
there's a lot going on.
A lot of good shit that you need to be listening to. You know, informative, like stuff that actually covers what you need to know versus confirming your biases. Because you know, that's a lot of.
Because again, I'm not good at that, so there's going to be a lot of conflict for people, and maybe that's healthier. Maybe that's better for you. I am the eating your vegetables of online tech commentary, and again, I'll own that if that's what's going down.
With all that being said, people, we will catch you guys in the next one. Mahalo for your time for listening to this episode of the Casanova Podcast, number one podcast in Hawaii. If you found this episode to be incredibly enjoyable, informative, or if there's anything you gain from it or any insight or, you know, anything that's good that you really, really enjoy, make sure whatever platform you're listening to it on, or if you're watching it, leave a comment if that's available on the platform, like it, share it around with someone you think would enjoy it, and give us some feedback, because your feedback is exactly what we need to keep this show going. And if you're wondering what are some ways that you could support the show, we got various ways. We've got Patreon, we have channel memberships over on YouTube, as well as Subscribestar, Ko-fi, and so much more. Links for everything will be in the description of the podcast, so make sure you go check that out. And with all that being said, I hope you have an aloha rest of your day.
Let them know that I'm next level. I'm a whole new kind of guy. Yeah. Yeah, at the top spot in case you forgot. We the ones that got the block hot. Bullet got the shot.